Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
What's going on in the Capitol and how it affects you? State Senator Tony Wong joins Tony and Melissa in the morning right now on WICC 600.
Senator, it's a pleasure to have you here on this Monday morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Happy Monday morning.
Yes, same to you, my friend. Now, let's get right to it. Last week, we were talking about a fourth Connecticut college student who died by suicide this past year. And it sounds like the state is looking into a task force. Can you tell us about that and what they're going to be doing?
Absolutely. Last year, we were aware of the concern, and by statute, we created a task force of medical professionals and college administrators to evaluate the health considerations of prevention and treatment of mental health and substance abuse on college campuses. And I'm happy to report last week the task force came back with a set of recommendations. And it was very powerful because some of the issues that were raised, we've always heard about it, but never clarified in the point that we did. We actually had Dr. Nance Roy, who's the Yale Medical School professor in the Department of Psychiatry, and she talked about the data that in 2009 to 2019, you know, anxiety went from 10% to 23% on our college campuses, and the same time period, from 10% to 18% in increase in depression among our students. So mental health is a critical issue rising as a concern for our college students. And she talked about college often being an intense and challenging environment. And she emphasized in broad scope to saying, we need to foster a community of support where comprehensive health care approaches promotes the well-being with a goal of reducing suicide and substance abuse on our campuses. That is a noble goal, and I think we all aspire to that. They came up with some specific recommendations. I'll name a couple that we are going to consider in higher education to take a statutory focus on that. I think the first one would be asking each of our college campuses to do an assessment of tools of their current approach to mental health and supportive services for them to assess their current strengths and weaknesses and be able to collaborate to see how they can do a better job. Another area is to have at least one case manager or a licensed counselor on staff addressing the mental health needs of their students. It's kind of remarkable to me that sometimes on a campus you don't have the skilled professionals that people can go to, and it's almost like on a schedule basis. So our emphasis is to have a constant present and at least one counselor present so students can go to them. The other interesting part was to develop a memorandum of understanding to look at local mental health agencies to be able to develop a collaborative referral pattern. So it's not just a indirect pattern that these individuals, professionals, can come on campus and to have a direct referral pattern so there's a resource. And I think the last thing is to kind of create a haven where students can go to, a point location where they can go to and develop peer network. What Dr. Nance Roy said emphasizing is the positive core of this is there's so much loneliness and peer disconnect that we need to foster an environment or a setting where the university and the college environment can foster that kind of network that we are so lacking in some cases.
Now, Senator, in all four cases just for this school year that were spanning from December to the most recent, which happened just a couple weeks ago, nothing has kind of come out in the news, at least, as to what triggered those death by suicides. It could be a number of things. But I'm just curious, you just mentioned how anxiety and depression on the rise in the last 10 years. I have to imagine just from reading other, you know, articles and just studies that this is kind of the same. We've seen a rise in suicides for high school students as well. Did Dr. Nance Roy at any point really touch on what are some of the biggest triggers causing this anxiety and depression? Like, do we know, you know, what are some of the biggest things that we need to target? Is it the fact that school is too expensive and people are stressed that their parents are paying for it or that they've got loans? Is it the workload? Is it, you know, social things? Like, did Dr. Roy actually touch on what exactly is causing this anxiety and depression?
Well, actually, she did cite that, and the task force are a collection of tremendous people, but she did cite that loneliness and isolation are significant risk factors for mental health problems and suicide behaviors. This is really, if you talk to college students and you feel the intense pressure of the academics and a new environment, the fact that loneliness and isolation are huge factors beyond the normal course of you know, self-esteem and concerns. It's less the external factors. It's kind of the internal feeling that you don't fit. That you're isolated.
But what about the pressures of keeping those grades up to a high level? That could be a big trigger as well. I mean, that must be pounding on these kids at all times. My God, my parents are paying for this. I've got to keep this, whatever it is, 4.0 grade average. Otherwise, we lose it. I mean, that's got to be on their minds at all times as well.
It is a tremendous pressure, but I will share with you, as a parent, and having our children go through school, grades are important as a result of effort, but as a parent, my first and foremost is their well-being. Mm-hmm. I think what you have is we have so many talented young students that have succeeded in every facet, succeeded in one part for themselves, but in another part for the people that love and support them. But they need to understand that no amount of grades, no amount of pressure that they put on themselves is ever worthy of their mental health and well-being, and that to lead to substance abuse. I can tell you unequivocally, for every parent that I know and for myself, I care about the health and well-being of a child beyond grades and what they are putting pressure on themselves. These individuals in school, these young, wonderful, talented people, put tremendous pressure on themselves, and we need to create an environment where they need to have an escape valve. And this is why having a counselor, having a haven where people can go to, and a peer network. I'll give you an example, and I know with Sacred Heart University, they initiated a peer counselor program in which they have bowling parties, they welcome new students and freshmen to incorporate them into meeting peer groups. These are powerful factors that I think matters more. But we've talked a bit about it is in the area of mental health as a society as a whole, Tony and Melissa, is we need to remove the stigma that individuals that struggle with mental health, struggle with anxiety and depression and isolation and loneliness, that they can seek help. That there is never a mark on them seeking help. It is never a mark of weakness. That we need to move from a society that encourages, it is an illness that needs medical support and encouragement and treatment. That we need to move away from seeing that as a social stigma of mental illness.
Tony, we've run out of time, my friend, but thank you so much for taking a few moments. Hopefully we can catch you again next Monday at the same time.
Well, thank you both for raising this important issue. Again, going back to the social perspective, you raising it raises awareness to let people know there are resources and help out there for them. So I want to thank both of you for having the foresight and the presence to support those in need in silence.
All right. Thank you, Tony. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
It's 9:30. You know what time it is? It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
All right. Crime on the Mind on Monday mornings. We always speak with Lieutenant Perez. He's here, and it's a pleasure to have him. Lieutenant, how are you this morning, my friend?
Good. How are you guys doing? Good morning.
We're doing okay. We're doing okay. You know, we're coming up on tax season, and we wanted to pick your brain a little bit about tax ID theft. Can you tell us what that is and how we can prevent it from happening?
Sure. Tax ID theft is where, well, first of all, what these scammers do is they get your information, principally your Social Security number, your date of birth, all that information. And then they turn around and they fraudulently file a tax return on your numbers. So what ends up happening is, you know, you go to file your tax returns, and when you do, you get a notification that it's already been filed or claimed, rather. And then you have to file now a report with the IRS and start a whole investigation as to how that happened. So the way to prevent that is to, number one, you have to almost file it immediately when you're able to. By the end of January is when the IRS starts to accept returns, and that's when you should do it, as soon as possible. But the other thing you can do is, if you do become compromised, you have to call the IRS, and I'll give that number a little bit later, but you have to call the IRS and actually start an investigation. Unfortunately, because, you know, it used to be that there were many ways for you to protect yourself from ID theft. Unfortunately, because of the big disruptions and the big breaches in huge cases like Equifax or like TJ Maxx and all these places that have been breached, your information is out there on what's called the dark web. And anybody can go to the dark web, or actually put in dark web and put in your name, and you can see whether you're on there or not. Chances are pretty much everyone is, because millions and millions upon millions of information has been stolen over the years. But one thing you can do is just make sure that you file it right away. The other thing is, if you do become a victim, and even if you're not a victim, there are approximately 20 states, Connecticut being one of them, where you could actually ask for a PIN number to be given to you every year before you actually file your taxes. And I would strongly recommend that everyone opt into that program. And that's something they can do as well.
Jim, forgive me, but is this something that you can detect pretty quickly? Like, say you do become duped by this, essentially. Do you find out pretty quickly that, oh, my Lord, there's all this money missing? Or is it something that maybe 5-6 months down the road you find out, like, oh, dang, you know, this happened, and now I've got to kind of figure out how to, you know, replenish that money or something? You know, is it pretty instantaneous, or does it take time before you actually notice you've been compromised?
It's not. It does take time to notice that you're compromised, because what will start to happen is you won't know this right away until you start getting an e-file tax return rejected, or your tax transcript you get a tax transcript in the mail from the IRS that you didn't request. Or you get a notice from the IRS that an online account has been created in your name. There's going to be signs, but there won't be right away. It'll be once the person has your information. That's one thing. Then they have to actually trigger the actual response on the return. The IRS will probably give the return, although they're being a lot more careful today, but they'll just give the return to this fictitious person. And then you won't find out until they start asking additional information to either try and get more money or to change the amount of money that they're actually owed. That's when the IRS will start sending you requests, and you'll start getting them in the mail. And if you start receiving all this stuff from the IRS, just know that chances are you've been compromised.
So, and by the time you start to get this information in the mail and you start to figure out that your information has been compromised, Lord knows how much damage they've done in the meantime.
Exactly. There could be multiple thousands of dollars that have been removed from your account. Fortunately, the IRS will reimburse you. They will start an investigation, and there will be a delay, sometimes an extreme delay, depending on the cases, you know, the depthness of the case. But there will be, nonetheless, there will be a delay before you actually get it, and eventually you will get it straightened out, and then the IRS themselves will give you a PIN number. Every single year for the rest of your life, you'll receive a PIN number that you have to actually give to your tax preparer or your accountant before you can actually file any future returns.
That's a real relief. That's a relief only because you hear so many times that, in fact, you're not going to ever see that money again. So that's good to know. So are there ways,
right,
Jim, just to remind our listeners how we can be proactive in making sure we don't actually have our information compromised? What can we do to be proactive about it?
Well, I mentioned before that about 20 states have what's called the online opt-in program for a PIN number. Connecticut is one of them. So you could actually reach out to the IRS and ask that a PIN number be assigned to you moving forward, so that you'll always have or so that no one can touch anything in your account unless you give that PIN number. And I'll tell you what, once you do receive that PIN number, you can't lose it because they will not give you another one. So you'd have to wait a whole other year before. Yeah, you'd have to wait a whole other year before you actually can file your taxes again. Then at that point, you'd have to do an extension, and you'd have to just be in contact. But just know that the IRS will never send you ever, either online or by phone call or by mail, they'll never send you a request for cash money. And they certainly will not send you a request to give gift cards or to go to CVS or to go to one of those non-traditional banking places to receive money. They just don't do that. So I just need people to understand that. But the other thing is just keep an eye on your credit report. Keep an eye on any documentation that you receive from the IRS. If they give you a letter saying that you've requested for something and you haven't requested, you need to immediately contact the IRS and actually let them know. And they actually are pretty good. They'll verify who you are, you know, by asking you some important questions, and then they'll turn around and they'll actually start investigating. So if you do need their number, it's the IRS Identity Protection Specialized Unit, and their number is 800-908-4490. And with them, you can actually fill out a what's called an IRS theft affidavit form, which is, you know, kind of like their standard form. And then you can kind of go from there. But more importantly, to prevent that whole thing is file your taxes early. Be aware of any discrepancies or any unusual activity on your account or any letters that you receive that you haven't gotten. And again, all of our information is likely out there. If you've ever shopped at Marshall's, TJ Maxx, any of those stores, if you've ever done any business with People's United Bank, if you've ever done any business over the years with one of the credit bureaus, I think it was Equifax is the one that had the breach. We're talking like 100 million people or so, you know, in total between those companies that have gotten compromised. So that's probably you and I. So our information is somewhere. It's just a matter of how do we protect our information now? And more importantly, what are the things that we have to look for within everyday life that will actually trigger us or give us a red flag that something is wrong? And over the course of the next few weeks, we'll be talking about a lot of other things within identity theft, because identity theft is a huge subject. And tax season is just one segment of many different identity theft problems.
Jim, we've run out of time. If people want more information, where can they go?
Well, they can go to the IRS.gov, or they can go to FTC, always FederalTradeCommission.gov, because they're always a good source to actually get you information. So those are the two sources that I would say to go to. Or
right.
Call that 800 number that I gave.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you so much, Jim. We'll talk to you next Monday.
All right. Absolutely. Have a great week.
All right. Bye. You got it. Lieutenant Jim Perez, Crime on the Mind, WACC 600.